is in 30 minutes, hopefully to get us energized and excited for Shabbos. This week is extremely overwhelming. There's so much to talk about. It is almost too much to talk about. We could go through the entire Haggadah today if you wish, but we're not going to do that. I'm going to spare you all that opportunity, although I will say that Pesach is in 9 short weeks. I repeat, Pesach is in 9 short weeks. We're almost there. So obviously it's very exciting to be able to study this morning's Torah portion. As always, I want to thank our sponsors for this week, sponsored anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tuvia, Ben Dov, Yehuda Leib, Chaim. Our learning should be Li'ule Nishmaso as an elevation for his soul. Okay, here we go. 3 ideas in 30 minutes. Erev Shabbos, winter break down here in Boca Raton. The guests are already here. I already feel like I'm a guest in my own community, a scholar in residence here in my, but I get to sleep in my own bed. It's the best of all worlds. What can I complain about? The song you heard, Sarah Newcomb, I already noticed, was a Joey Newcomb song, Mika Amcha Yisrael, how blessed we are, the Jewish people. And that's what I'm feeling here this morning, inspired by the incredible Benny Friedman concert here at Boca Raton Synagogue last night, celebrating 70 years since the elevation of the leadership of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik, V'kadosh Levracha, Zechuso Yogin Aleinu. And it's with that energy that I approach our learning this morning. Okay, here we go. 3 ideas in 30 minutes. I see all 3 of my kids are on. So we'll do 1 idea for each of my children that is on this Zoom this morning. Okay, the first idea is something that I never noticed really, but it's a word that comes up a lot and is used a lot. And so I thought we would take a minute to really define the term. Twice, when God tells us that he's going to take us out of Mitzrayim, he does something very interesting. And he says that not only is he going to take us out of Egypt, but he's also going to, V'nasati eschein ha'am hazeh b'nei Mitzrayim, that I'm going to give a favorability. Right? When the Egyptians look at the Jewish people, there's going to be a favorability, a word chein. Now we throw around the word chein, right? This person has chein, this person has chein, this person has chein. We don't really know what that means, right? There's a sweetness to it. There's an innocence to it. There's a niceness to it. We don't really know what the word means. And so already in the beginning of the book of Exodus, when Hashem tells Moshe to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, he says, not only are you going to take them out of Egypt, but I'm also going to give the chein, this favorability. Already in this week's parsha, when Hashem then comes to take us out of Egypt, it says, V'Hashem nasan eschein ha'am b'inei Mitzrayim. Hashem actually brings this to fruition, where he actually bestows the favorability of the Jewish people onto the eyes of the Egyptians. And what I want to do, very briefly, is define what exactly that chein is, what exactly that favorability is. I was told that there are people who listen who don't always understand the Hebrew words, so I'll do my best to translate. But that's what we're going to do. I don't have a good translation for the word chein. I don't know what it means. What does the word chein mean? That there's this sweetness, this innocence, this favorability. What in the world does it mean? So the Mechilta already tells us, offers a number of different interpretations as to what this word chein means. And first, it offers the approach of Rabbi Yishmael in the Medrash, where it says that the word chein means that the Egyptians offered their goods to the Jewish people even before we made the request. It means that the Jewish people showed up at the door of the Egyptians, and before even a word was spoken, before I even had to make any request whatsoever of the Egyptians, they said, here you go. Right, that would be the equivalent of Rabbi Goldberg going to someone's house, asking for a donation for the shul. And before he even asked for a donation to Boca Raton Synagogue, he said, Rabbi, I'm going to save you the time. Here's a check for $1 million. Or have Rabbi Brody had won Powerball the other night? Here's a check for $100 million. Right before Rabbi Goldberg even had to ask. That's what's called hitting the fundraising jackpot. Before you even have to ask for it, the person says, here, I want to give it to you. But then the Medrash offers a second interpretation, and that is from Rav Yossi. And Rav Yossi says the following, and I'm going to read it in Hebrew, but I'll translate it. Mahu hachein hazeh. What does this word mean that God gave the favorability to the Jewish people? He explains that for 3 days of the darkness, the Jewish people had unfiltered access to anything they wanted in Egypt. Right? Don't forget, the Egyptians were traumatized by this overwhelming darkness. They couldn't see anything. And the Jews could have done anything. For them, it was completely light. They could have had access to anything they wanted. They could have gone into the Egyptians' houses. They could have taken anything, the gold and the silver, the iPhones and the MacBook Air, right? They could have taken anything they wanted. And the fact that they didn't, the Egyptians said, maybe this people are actually a little bit more trustworthy than we thought. Says the Midrash that for 3 days, the Jewish people could have taken anything. They could have gone into the Egyptians' houses. They could have gone into their warehouses, their businesses, and the Egyptians never would have known. They were completely consumed with darkness. And so, says the Midrash, the Chain, that God had implanted into the hearts of the Egyptians, refers to the trust that the Jewish people had earned when they refrained from taking the Egyptians' property during the plague of darkness. That when that plague ended, and the Egyptians saw that their property was still there, that it was intact, despite the fact that the Jewish people could have taken anything they wanted, now they had a newfound trust of the Jewish people. They recognized the Jewish people's integrity and dignity. Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, the great biblical commentary, in his commentary on the Bible, on the Torah, suggests, builds upon this idea and says, you want to know what the word chain means? It's an integrity. It's the respect and the admiration that the Egyptians felt towards the Jewish people because of the honesty and integrity that the Jewish people manifested during that plague in Egypt. I'm going to read for you the words of Rav Hirsch, where he says, the honesty and magnanimity which the Jews displayed during the 3 days of darkness had so raised the opinion of the Egyptians towards the Israelites that when they pressed their possessions against them before they were even asked and stripped themselves of their treasures. In other words, after the plague of darkness, the Egyptians were so enamored with the Jewish people. They were so enamored with the fact that the Jewish people had refrained from taking the Egyptians' possessions. Don't forget, the Egyptians weren't their friends. They had been their oppressors for over 200 years. And yet, when the opportunity presented itself to seize their possessions, the Jewish people didn't do it. They maintained a sense of dignity and integrity and honesty. And that was what so conjured up or earned the Jewish people's respect and admiration in the eyes of the Egyptians. And so it was out of this admiration and out of this respect that even before the Jewish people came to the Egyptians, the Egyptians showered them with the wealth, with their possessions, with their gold and their silver. What an amazing idea from Rav Hirsch built off of the Midrash. Because what it shows us is that we oftentimes talk about this idea of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying God's name. That our job in this world is to make a favorable impression upon the Gentile world in which we live. Then we do so through the arts and the sciences. We do through work. I don't know about you, but every time I went on a vacation or every time we went on a class trip, the final idea that our teachers told us before we got off the bus was, don't forget that you're Jews and you're representing Judaism. You're representing God and godliness in the world. And so therefore you have to behave a certain way and you have to treat everyone with a certain respect and a certain sense of dignity. And so we learn very early on as children that is the way that we have to behave in no matter whatever interaction we have. And here, says Rav Hirsch, is exactly what the Jewish people did as they were leaving Egypt. That what earned them the respect of their oppressors was that they had the ability to be morally superior to them, even in the most difficult of situations. That what is our chain? What is the charm of the Jewish people? It's not that we have good smiles. It's not that we're good looking. It's not, no. The chain, the sweetness and the charm of the Jewish people is that we treated everyone with dignity and with integrity and with honesty. That experience in Egypt, more than anything else, shows us that the most meaningful and effective way for the Jewish people to win the favor and admiration of the world around us, the singular most meaningful an effective way for us to make an impact and an imprint and a mark on the world around us is through integrity, it's through decency, it's through honesty, It's through the strictest of ethical standards in all areas of our lives. Obviously, one could go on and on with the implications and the repercussions of this idea in our day and age. I don't know about you, but every time you look at the front pages of a newspaper and you see a Jewish name there, you cringe a little bit and you say, what a chil Hashem, what a desecration of God's name. We have to remember that to be a Jew, that if we really want to make an impact on the world around us, it starts and stops with our honesty and decency. It starts with making and shaping our lives with the highest, strictest of ethical standards and adhering to that sense of dignity and that sense of integrity in all areas of our lives and certainly and specifically in our business dealings. What impressed the Egyptians, says the Midrash, says Rav Hirsch, is specifically the fact that we did not steal from them. It's specifically the fact that despite that they had oppressed us for all those years, even when the opportunity presented itself, we didn't abuse that opportunity. But rather, we maintained the highest of ethical standards, a beautiful idea from Rav Hirsch, something that I think every single one of us has to take to heart as we interact and engage with the world around us in business and at the supermarket and at the gym, right? And when we want to handle, I'll never forget a story. I'll give you a maisa. I know I'm going a little bit over. But it's yeshiva week. Our kids are off. Where are we going, right? So here's this idea. I was once in a cab in Israel. And the cab driver had quoted me, I think it was like 20 shekel. And I knew that the ride was 18 shekel. And it bothered me so much because I wanted to get a good deal. And so I started handling with the cab driver. 18 shekel, 19 shekel, 20 shekel. Finally, a friend looked at me, said, Phil, you're really handling over 2 shekel? 2 shekel, someone's going to do the math for me and put it in the chat. 2 shekel is not a lot of money. And I could tell you with all certainty that that 2 shekel meant a lot more to the cab driver than it did to me. He said, what are you making, Achil Hashem, by handling over 2 shekel? You're in yeshiva now, you're wearing a kippah, you're wearing your tzitzis, right? Think about what this cab driver is going to think about yeshiva guys as a result of you handling over the 2 shekel. And it was 100% right. And for the rest of my life, up until this point, I've taken that to heart. And I've reminded that even though we want a good deal and we should never be taken advantage of, we always have to remember that we are representatives of God's army. We are representatives of Hashem in this world. And the way that we treat people, the ethical standards, the honesty, integrity, the decency, that is what creates that sweetness. That is what creates that charm. That is what defines the chen of the Jewish people. That is idea number one. Beautiful idea from Rav Hirsch. Idea number two comes from, I make a lot of enemies on ideal number two. A lot of enemies. See, if you guys were, I'm gonna insult everyone if I say that, but if you want, there's an option to raise your hand in Zoom, right? You're welcome to raise your hand if you're a dog lover on this chat, okay? Now, if there's a way to do thumbs down, I would do thumbs down, because many of you know that as much as I don't love flowers, and I'm still making up for the fact that I desecrated flowers on this Zoom a couple of months ago, I like dogs even less. Right? You will see me, I'll be in the middle of a run, I'll be like in the middle of a marathon. And if there's a dog within sniffing distance of me, I stop dead in my tracks, I'm petrified of dogs, I don't like dogs. All right, maybe some of you will drop off now and not join us again in the future. It should be the worst of the problems of Rabbi Moskowitz is that he doesn't like dogs. Right? And yet, the Torah dogs are gentle. No, they're not. And yet, the Torah, until they bite off your arm. Okay? And yet the Torah tells us, Ulechol b'nei Yisrael lo yecharatz kelev l'shono l'me'ish v'ad b'ema, that it gives credit to the dogs. That as the Jewish people were sneaking out of Egypt, the dogs didn't bark the entire night. That the dogs, that the dogs kept quiet the entire night of the Exodus from Egypt. And that was one of the miracles that the Torah seems to highlight about the Exodus from Egypt. Let me ask you a question. Out of all the miracles that God performs, right, turning water into blood and killing the firstborn and creating darkness, right, incredible miracles. And then we mention that dogs didn't bark. Now, I happen to have a neighbor that has a dog, right, that barks a lot. Now, they say the bigger the bark, the less the bite, or there's something like that. I don't know. I'm scared of it all, right? But my kids, they know that when they go to the door, even before they ring the doorbell, right, the dog's already, right? So yeah, I understand. It's a miracle that if I came to my neighbor's door and the dog didn't bark at me, that would be somewhat of a miracle, right? But a miracle worthy of being mentioned in the Torah as one of the great things that happened on the night of the Exodus. There was a plethora, a myriad of miracles that took place. And we're mentioning that the fact that the dogs didn't bark, what seemingly insignificant and trivial detail in the story, and yet the Torah makes mention of it. I want to share with you a magnificent idea, magnificent, gorgeous idea from Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner of Yitzchak Huttner, of course, the famous Rosh Yeshiva 20th century. He says that we're getting it all wrong. Getting it all wrong. That Chazal say, our rabbis tell us, that the characteristic of a dog, you guys are all going to like this, is chutzpah. I don't have a good translation of chutzpah. How do you translate chutzpah? Chutzpah's chutzpah, right? That the characteristic of a dog is chutzpah. Now, how do we know that? The rabbis tell us that the ikvasa de Mashiach, the generation of the coming of the Messiah, the Messianic era, it says, Pnei Hador, Kibnei HaKelev, that the face of the generation is like the face of a dog, in that the dog has chutzpah. Now, you ask people what the chutzpah of a dog is, and most people will tell you that the chutzpah of a dog is that it barks and it bites. That is the chutzpah of the dog. Says Rav Huttner, that's not correct at all. Right? I'm saving dogs right now. That the chutzpah of the dog is not that it barks and not that it bites. I'm going to make a lot of enemies right now. But it's Rav Huttner, don't blame me. That the chutzpah of the dog is that it thinks that it's a dog's, that it's a man's best friend. The chutzpah of the dog is that it sees itself as the friend of a human being. There's no other animal that feels that type of feeling towards people, that it feels like it's our friend, except for the dog who feels that it is man's best friend. Says Rav Huttner, what a chutzpah. Why is it a chutzpah? Because human beings are so much better. Human beings are so much elevated. How can a dog feel like it's a human being's best friend? And so in a world that doesn't appreciate the greatness of human beings and what a person is capable of becoming, right? So yeah, then it's a beautiful thing to assume that a dog is man's best friend. But if you recognize just how great mankind is, if you recognize the capacity that every single one of us has for greatness, then the comparison to a dog is downright insulting. And so says Rav Huttner, the chutzpah is that the dog sees itself as a friend of the human being. That explains that what it means that the Messianic era is Pnei Hador Kipnei HaKelev, right? That the chutzpah of the generation is not that the dogs bark, but it's that we don't recognize the greatness of ourselves. We don't recognize the greatness of each other. We don't recognize the greatness of what human beings are and what our capacity is and what we can become. That is the midah, that is the characteristic of the chutzpah of the dog. Now we come back to our parsha. This is an idea, by the way, that I saw it inside subsequently, but Rabbi Reisman quotes this idea, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. I saw it, my eyes popped out of my brain. I was so excited by it. Says Rabbi Reisman, this is the idea in the parsha. That when we say that one of the miracles of that night is lo yicharatz kelev lishono, that the dog did not bark, it means that the dogs in Egypt, the animals that were the last to appreciate the greatness of human beings, they finally recognized our holiness. They finally recognized the elevated level of the Jewish people as they left Mitzrayim, as we left Egypt. They didn't consider themselves friends of the Jewish people, and they certainly didn't bark against the Jewish people, but rather, finally, they saw our elevated status. And so as we left Egypt, they sat there in awe and admiration of human beings, not because they thought of us as their best friend, but because they finally recognize our elevated level of Kedusha, our elevated level of holiness. And so, yes, I have made many enemies on this chat in just a very short period of time. But the miracle, says Rabbi Reisman, quoting Rav Huttner, of the dogs not barking, is a recognition, finally, of the greatness of human beings. And that is something, as we've spoken about in the past, that is so tragically lost on our generation. That we have lost a recognition of what it means to be a human being, of what it means to be endowed with a sense of godliness placed within us to accomplish incredible things here on this earth. That it's not that God woke up one morning and said, you know what, I have a little extra space on Montoya Circle. Let me create Philip Moskowitz. Let me give Philip Moskowitz another day. No! It's that God sees within every single one of us enormous potential. We have a chelek eloka mimal. We have an element of godliness that's placed within us. We have a tselem elokim. We were created in the image of God. The chutzpah of the dog says that he is man's best friend. No, he's not. Because as much as I'm joking around and dogs are wonderful, yada, 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 you simply can't compare the two. Human beings are endowed with so much kedusha. Human beings are endowed with so much holiness and so much potential. The dogs finally realized that as they left Egypt, it is high time for me and you, for you and I, oh gosh, my mom's going to be upset. It is high time for us to recognize that potential in ourselves as well. And so idea number one was a beautiful idea from Rav Hirsch, that what earned us the respect and the admiration, the chen that we experienced when we left Egypt was not just charm, it wasn't just that we had a good smile, and no, is that we always dealt with the Egyptians with honesty, integrity, with decency, with the highest, strictest ethical standards. And that's something that you and I, in our community, in our society, need to be very wary of as we engage with the outside world. Idea number two was this beautiful idea of Rabbi Reisman. That what does it mean the dogs didn't bark? And then finally, as we left Egypt, the dogs recognized the holiness of the Jewish people. They sat there with awe and reverence for who the Jewish people were and what we represented and the capacity and the potential that we have as being created in the image of God. And if the dogs can recognize that, then it is high time that you and I recognize that in ourselves as well. Idea number three comes from an unlikely source, and that is Rabbi Sacks. Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. Now, the reason why I say it's an unlikely source is you'll notice that I think this is like our 32nd three ideas in 30 minutes, and yet I have not quoted Rabbi Sacks once. I don't believe I have. And the reason why I have not quoted Rabbi Sacks once is not because I don't love respect Rabbi Sacks and enamored by his Torah, but rather it is because you can read Rabbi Sacks. You don't need me for Rabbi Sacks. You can read him on your own. And yet there are some ideas that I think that are so transformative that it requires us to mention it on this shiur, on this class, because I think it is so profound and so fundamental to everything we believe in. Rabbi Sacks points out, and you have to put yourself in the shoes. Picture yourself as Moshe Rabbeinu, as Moshe our teacher. The Jewish people are on the cusp of freedom, and you get to give them a speech that is going to define that transition from slavery to freedom for eternity. What do you say in that speech? Survey Sachs points out you could be like Abraham Lincoln at the Gettysburg Address, and you could utilize that opportunity to speak about liberty, and to speak about freedom, and to speak about breaking the chains and ending the slavery. You could speak about freedom. He says you could also speak about the destination. They are going to a land of milk and honey, right? And you could talk about not where you were, but where you are going and what your destination looks like. He says you could also speak about a more somber theme, which is that the journey that lays ahead is a dangerous journey. That, he says, is what Nelson Mandela called the long walk to freedom. And any of these would have been great opportunities, great speeches, historic speeches. And we saw Lincoln and we saw Mandela, all of them utilize those moments, the cusp of freedom, to impart those messages on their people. And yet you'll notice, and it's astounding and it's so fundamental and we should all take it to heart, it is not what Moshe does. Rather, on the cusp of freedom, what does Moshe say? Not once, not twice, but three times. The following. He says, when I take you out, your children are going to ask you, what are we doing? And says the Torah, you're supposed to tell them exactly what they are doing. Later on, the Torah tells us, that you have to teach your children. You have to tell your children. You have to instruct your children. A few verses later, when your son asks of you, Mazos, what am I doing? V'amarta elav, you have to tell him exactly what it is that he or she is doing. And so says Rabbi Sacks, and I'm going to read you his language because I can't do it justice. It is gold. My friends, it is gold. He says, about to gain their freedom, the Israelites were told that they had to become a nation of educators. That he didn't speak about freedom. He didn't speak about the long walk ahead. He didn't speak about the land of Israel. But rather, Moshe spoke about education. That we are a nation of educators. This is what made Moses not just a great leader, but a unique one. What the Torah is teaching is that when freedom is won not on the battlefield, nor in the political arena, nor in the courts, national or international, but in the human imagination and will. To defend a country, you need an army. But to defend a free society, you need schools. You need families and an educational system in which ideals are passed on from one generation to the next and never lost or despaired of or obscured. There has never been a more profound understanding of freedom. It is not difficult, Moses was saying, to gain liberty, but to sustain it is the work of 100 generations. Forget it, and you lose it. And so Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us that to really understand and appreciate freedom starts and stops with us becoming a nation of educators, with us utilizing that opportunity to impart the wisdom of past generations onto the next generation and ensure that those lessons are never lost, because forget it and you lose it. He explains that the very first thing, or one of the very first things that the Jews did in the destruction of the Second Temple after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was not lament and was not mourn. It was not to throw themselves on the ground wailing. No, that one of the very first things that they did was set up the world's first educational system of universal compulsory education paid for by public funds, right? That's what we call Ben Gamla schools. Other societies caught on only generations later. And therefore, Rabbi Sacks concludes with the following amazing words. He says, what, thanks to Torah, Jews never forgot is that freedom is a never-ending effort of education in which parents, teachers, homes, and schools are all partners in the dialogue between generations. You'll notice, he doesn't just say schools, and he doesn't just say shuls, but it is a dialogue between, it is a partnership between parents and teachers and homes and schools. All of those are laboratories of education. He says, learning is the very foundation of Judaism, the guardian of our heritage and hope. That is why when tradition conferred upon Moses the greatest honor, it did not call him Moses, our hero, our prophet, or our king. Rather, it called him simply Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher. For it is in the arena of education that the battle for the good society is lost or won. And so idea number three is this incredible idea by Rabbi Sacks, an appreciation of something that perhaps you and I take for granted because so many of us have been indoctrinated with this idea of education and Jewish education, and because we talk about it at Passover, at the Pesach Seder night. But we should never for a moment take the novelty of this idea for granted. That when Moshe Rabbeinu could have taught the Jewish people any lesson, he could have taught them about freedom and the perils of slavery. He could have taught them about the land of Israel. He could have talked about the long journey. But no, he utilized it at the infancy of us as a people to remind us about the importance of education, to remind us that free society, that the greatness of society is built upon hope and imagination and will and education and making sure that the past and the lessons of the past are not lost, but that the tradition and our heritage is passed on to the next generation. And that is why we confer upon him the title of Moshe Rabbeinu. He is Moses, our teacher. Because what greater title could there be for a person than as an educator? Because as Rabbi Sacks said, for it is in the battle of education, it is in the arena of education, that the battle of the good society is lost or won. And so we saw in 30 very short minutes, again, there's so much to talk about. It was so hard to narrow it down this week. It was almost impossible. But I hope I found three ideas that you'll think about and that you'll reflect upon and that you use as points of discussion. Idea number one was the very beautiful idea from Rav Hirsch. What was it, the chein? What was the charm, the sweetness that the Jewish people displayed as they left Egypt? It was not because they had a good smile, and it's not because they looked attractive. No. Rather, it was their honesty. It was the decency. It was the ethical standards with which they conduct themselves that truly enamored themselves to the Egyptians. It's something that we should take to heart, that if we want to maintain that chen as a people, if we want to maintain that sweetness and charm as a people, it starts by how we treat other people. It starts with our ethical standards. Idea number two was a beautiful idea by Rabbi Reisner, quoting Rav Huttner. That what does it mean the dogs didn't bark? What was the big miracle about that? Who cares that the dogs didn't bark? Says Rabbi Reisman, quoting Rav Huttner, no. That the chutzpah of the dog is that the dog thinks that it's man's best friend. The chutzpah of the dog is that it sees itself as a friend to a human being. It even puts itself in the same category as a human being. No, human beings are holy. Human beings are created in the image of God. Human beings have a tselem Elokim. We have God in us. We are categorically different than animals. Yes, we all have that animalistic instincts with inside of us, what the Baal HaTanya called a nefesh bahamis, an animalistic soul. But you know what else we have? We have a chelek eloka mimal. We have an element of God and godliness inside of us as well. The dog didn't bark that last night because they finally had an appreciation for what we call godless ha'adam, the greatness of what it means to be a human being. We should never underestimate ourselves, my friends. We should never underestimate our capacity to achieve greatness in this world and to make an impact and a mark on this world, to achieve our mission, our mandate, our purpose of spreading God and godliness and His mission and His message in this world. And so while I love dogs, no, I really don't, but I'll try to save myself. While I love dogs, right, we are categorically different. We are human beings. And the last idea, this really golden idea from Rabbi Sacks, where he reflects upon the message that the Jewish people, that Moshe imparts on the Jewish people, when he could have spoken about a whole myriad of things. And if you're at your Shabbos table with children or grandchildren this Shabbos, ask them this question. Say, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, what would you give as that speech? What would be your Gettysburg Address? What would be your speech for Moshe Rabbeinu right now? What would be your Nelson Mandela speech? In the Chiddush, the novelty of the Torah, one of the greatest contributions they imparted upon mankind, is that Moshe spoke about education. He spoke about homes and parents and teachers and schools and shuls all partnering together to impart the message of our history, the lessons of our heritage, onto the next generation. Because as Rabbi Sacks pointed out, that the battle is ultimately going to be won in the arena of education. And so with that, I shared three ideas in 30 minutes. I want to wish everyone a beautiful, peaceful, and healthy Shabbos. And I look forward to learning together next week.